Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello and welcome. It's Friday. You've made it through another week. Congratulations. And remember, the fun doesn't end with today's show. You can also catch me on Coast to Coast AM tonight and Saturday. I'll be hosting both nights. You can find information by going to coasttocoastam.com and click on the stations tab. There it will open up and you'll be able to see all kinds of information on which stations, times, and places you can listen to the show in and around your area. You can also make it a lot easier. You can listen to us right from our home station in St. Cloud, Minnesota, knsiradio.com. That's knsiradio.com. You can get the KNSI Radio app to stream the show, or you can listen to it right from your laptop or tablet by going to knsiradio.com. That's tonight from midnight till 4 a.m. Central, and tomorrow from midnight till 4 a.m. Central. Join me on the best in overnight talk radio, Coast to Coast AM. It's time now to fire off with the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Today, between love and hate, the devil is real. John Egan is our guest today. John, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dave. It's an honor to be here.
Let me find out a little bit about you and your life prior to the incidents that you cover in this book. Were you someone that grew up with a strong faith and conviction in religion? Did you have a belief in the supernatural? Where did that all come in?
Well, yeah, you know, I was born in Brooklyn. I went to a parochial school. So I was, you know, taught in the faith. And as I grew up and I went to college, I kept my faith. And I believed in what most people believe in, you know, heaven and hell and that sort of thing. And before I really became like a little bit more religious, I was a special ed teacher. So I would have these children in there who really didn't have anything going on, you know. And I started thinking to myself that I'm really pretty blessed. I mean, these children had nothing. We had like those iron rollers in the classroom, and I put a box there, and one child would roll the box down, another child would put something in it, and then another child would try to tape it up because that's what they thought kind of their jobs would be, you know. Once they got out. So I felt kind of blessed then, and I felt like maybe I should do something to, thank God for my blessings. And then I had these other children who were, really young, 8, 9, 10 years old. They had these terrible cancers, and they were never going to be cured, and I felt so bad for them. There'd be a teacher aide in the room there all the time to help them. They would drool and stuff, and I would give them, papers to draw on and crayons, and they would try so hard to draw in between the lines, and I knew it wasn't going to amount to anything because they weren't going to live very long, and, you know, they weren't going to be good drawers. And then I thought, you know, I'm really blessed. Is there something I could do to thank God for my blessing? You know, I'm just a normal person, but when you work with these people, you really feel blessed. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I get it. I get the point is that you realize – how much we take for granted when you see people that have life-threatening issues or life-altering issues that are going to in some ways, limit their abilities and limit their actions in life.
Yeah, so that's when I decided, maybe what I could do, I know I could pray, so I'll pray, and maybe that'll be what I'll do in my life. And then I kind of fell in love with praying, so I did pray every single day. And then I started working, because you don't get paid that much when you're a teacher, so I started working in nightclubs at night. And that's where I found that, like, a little darker people, you know, who come out at night.
Right. It's a different breed, right?
Yeah, a little bit. So I started to realize, I would associate with them and talk to them, and they come in every single night, and you see them and you talk to them. But they were into, darker things, and atheism was big. I don't know why atheism is so big nowadays, but kind of, even in my extended family, I have nephews who are atheists. They weren't brought up that way, but they somehow they just fall into this lifestyle. And these people at night, they didn't have any regard for God. They didn't have any regard for them. They never practiced their religion. I mean, prostitution, adultery, and drugs, and alcohol were all part of their lifestyle, and didn't faze them one bit, you know. But a lot of these people died, like, young, like by overdosing or car accidents. Or I had one friend who actually worked, the place that I worked at was a pretty big place and had thousands of people that would come in. There was at least 100 people working there, so we'd see each other on a daily basis at night. And this one gentleman, he smoked and drank a lot, and he didn't feel well, and he went to the doctor, and he had he had the worst cancer that you could possibly have, the face of it, and he died within a few weeks. But then I knew he died, like, in the middle of his life, that he never had a chance, like, to get old. I guess when you get older, you kind of start thinking a little bit differently, you know, but he died in the middle of his, like, a slave to all his sins, you know. So he was like one of the people that I would say to God, you know, listen, if there is a hell, don't send this person to hell until I finish praying for him. So I did that for a lot of people over my lifetime. So I prayed for a lot of people who were in the middle of their sins, died in the middle of their sins, never had time to repent. And so that's
so you, you took it upon yourself, right? You took it upon yourself to become an intercessor. You wanted to help, which, I mean, what a commendable position to find yourself in, that whether these people believe or not, you wanted somebody to speak on their behalf.
Right, exactly. Because I heard, and I don't know if you heard, you read the Bible and you read other things and you hear that, I mean, people fall into hell like snowflakes from the sky. And it sounds like a lot of people are falling in, you know. So I thought if I could help some of these people I would. And I kind of took that as my lifelong thing, that that's what I kind of do. I mean, I don't know. I can't help everybody. There's no one person can do it all, but you could just do what you can do, you know. So that's what I've done my life so far. I think that's relevant to when we talk about the actual apparition that happened in this house, so that you'll understand why that is relevant to what it told me anyway.
Right. So you've got this life that you felt a certain calling to do something above and beyond what most people would even consider doing. Most of us, you know,
right,
throw out a prayer here and there. We offer condolences and thoughts, but you actually took it upon yourself not so much to pray for their healing or pray for that, but it was more along the lines of praying for the issues, for forgiveness, for, like I said, intercessing on their behalf.
Right. And then you and me and everybody listening, I'm sure, you know, we heard stories about, you know, heaven, and then God made angels in heaven, right? And then some of these angels were so powerful, like Satan, that they wanted to strike out on their own, I guess. You know, I'm not sure exactly of the story, but, I mean, their pride becomes before the fall, and they were so powerful, and they didn't want to, like, obey God anymore, I guess. I suppose that's what happened. And then they got cast out. I mean, then you've heard of that. Like, and then they took, like, these most powerful angels took, like, a third of the angels with them. I mean, you've heard that story, right?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So, supposedly, according to the book, a lot of people believe that these demons were cast to hell, but they weren't. They were cast to earth and given dominion over the earth. That was their person until the end times, when there would be an overall judgment, and those that had been buried before would rise, and there would be a sorting, and the good would go to heaven and the bad would then descend to hell with Satan and his minions at that point in time in history. So that's, if I remember correctly, that's the theological story of what's going on and where these demons lie. And I think that's also important to know, right? Because if that is true, and if you believe in the theological discussion of what a demon is, how they have such ready access to us, they're right around us. This is where they were cast. Yeah. Which,
right.
I think you can understand, you know, you were talking about how the rise of atheism has come to fruition. I think it's because a lot of people have problems trying to, you know, you have a God that creates and is this all-loving, all-powerful God. But yet, what does he do? He takes the troublemakers, he takes the demonic realm, purges them from his realm, and then sets them onto a place that with the people that he loves and wants to protect. And, you know, I mean, I can understand the dichotomy of why people feel so, you know, opposed to some thoughts of religion. It just doesn't, a lot of it doesn't make sense. And when you go to religious leaders in a lot of ways, unfortunately, John, the answers are not always there. They don't really know how to answer. Yeah, God works in mysterious ways is unfortunately not an answer that holds much water nowadays.
I know, but you know what? I got sort of a word up for that.
Sure.
And, you know, a lot of people say to me, okay, you know, if God created everything, why is there evil? You know, why is bad things happen and why are there evil? And the only way I can explain that is if when this creator decided to create this, I mean, he must have created a lot of things, and this is just one of them, because I think that's all he does is create. And this heaven-hell universe thing that we're involved is something that he could have did. He didn't have to do it. But like when I tell people, you can't create the north without, and no matter how much north you create, it's going to be a south. And no matter how much west you create, it's going to be an east. So you can't create everything perfect and good, because whatever the goodness that he's trying to create, evil is going to come along with it, no matter what. So it's either don't do it, and none of us would be here, or do it, and we'll deal with it. Doesn't that make sense?
To a degree, I get the theory behind that. It, like I said, I think it's just that's where there is such a break from religion, is people just have a hard time believing that if there is a loving, caring, omnipotent God, that he would cast the darkness right here next to us instead of flinging them far across. You know, why not throw them to Pluto? Why not give, you know, Lucifer dominion over Pluto? And then we'll take it from a planet status and drop it to a much smaller status. So boy, that'll show him. That'll even hurt his ego more. But instead he casts him right here to his special people. And people die horrific ways, and there's torture, and there's all of these things. And it just feels like, I think in a lot of ways, people feel that if there is a God, he has abandoned his people on this planet.
Well, when we actually discuss the apparition, I could almost explain that from what it showed me. So when we get to that point.
Sure. Well, growing up, did you ever witness anything that you would consider to be supernatural or paranormal, angels, demons, ghosts? Was that ever part of your world?
No, not really. Actually, no. I lived in a very logical world. You know, you heard stories, I heard stories. But the one that hit home for me was my dad. In our family, we have, thank God I don't have it. I have six brothers and sisters. So we have this blood problem that caused my father to have a heart attack early and his father to have a heart attack early. But they didn't really know what it was back then. So not that long ago, my brother, who was like 49 years old, felt the same symptoms one morning, and he got to the hospital, and he had we didn't know at the time that this was this blood problem. So he has a heart attack, he dies while he was at the hospital, and so they revive him, right? So the thing that struck home was when I went to go visit him, he said to me, Johnny, when I died, I got off that table, and he said these demons came into the room and started talking to me and started getting their hands on me and started walking me out to like a darker corner of the hospital room. So he said he saw himself on. I mean, he was a logical man. I mean, he was, you know, he's just average regular guy who lived this, you know, he's a contractor, you know, just a normal guy. He said he saw them trying to revive him by, you know, getting his heart back together and then going again. And once
and what
he,
you're,
they got
not,
him
not
revived,
the demons,
was,
not the demons trying to revive him, but no, while, he was, right, while he was out of his body, not only was he seeing these these demons, but he was seeing them working feverishly to try to get him back to life. The doctors.
Exactly. Okay. And, yeah. So he sees this, and these demons are talking to him, and they got their hands on him, and they're pushing him towards the darkness of the room. I don't know what he were, you know, he was in another, some, I don't know, where, you know, he was in the room, but whatever, you know, in another dimension. And he sees the doctors working on him feverishly and trying to get him back, and then they get his heart started, and he goes back into his body again. So he said to me, this is the, I can't believe it. This really happened. I really saw it, you know, and that's when it really struck home to me when he told me that story of what happened to him. So, but then what happened was we all left. And we thought, okay, he's better now. But that night, around 1 o'clock in the morning, I got a call and they said he's back in the in the operating room. He had another heart attack. So I went, and a lot of my family went. And I really felt that he was in dire straits. I had everybody, let's hold hands and let's pray for him and see if what we could do for him, you know. So finally, he was in there for hours. Finally, the doctor came out and said, okay, he said, well, we got him. He said, okay, and we got him back together. But he wants to check all of us and see if we have that blood, the same blood disease that they just, you know, kind of just was new to them. So I went and I said to him, you know, that night when you were operating on my brother, we all prayed. And he said, you know, I had the first time in my life, I had an epiphany, he said. And I had no idea how to help this man. And then he had an epiphany. So something came and told him how to help him. And when I told that to Paul, he was jumping up and down and thanking me, kissing me, because he was going in a different direction. He's one of the most religious guys I know today, believe it or not.
I certainly believe it. I mean, that could be a life-altering experience for anyone.
Now, why? I know, and you would think he was a normal person. Now, why? I mean, I know he fell away from his religion. He lived with a woman for, and not that I'm saying he didn't. He never gave his kids a religion. They never, nobody ever, you know, gave God just 2 minutes of the time. Maybe that's what happens when, stay with God, you know, keep. That's, maybe this is what happened. I don't know if these demons can take you. I could tell you a lot later when we talk about the actual apparition and what I learned from that. But stuff happens when you die. I mean, you go on a journey when you die.
And the journey that takes you through, I'm sure, like the life review, a lot of what we've heard about and kind of that decision of where you're going to end up. Now, you've had that as kind of your background. You hear your own flesh and blood tell you this story and about the demons. I mean, how does that make you feel? Does that then make you start to check, hey, you know, my brother's not a really bad guy. Why are demons coming for him? You know, does that make you start checking yourself and what you need to do to kind of make sure that you're in alignment and that your future doesn't have a dark portal waiting for you?
I know. I mean, when I was a kid back in Brooklyn, you know, we could go to church, and it would be hard to even find a seat in church back then. But nowadays, when I go to church, it's the pews are almost empty. I mean, they really are. I mean, my religion has, they say, at least 75% have dropped out almost from not going to church, not practicing it. You know, that's not really a good trend, I don't think, anyway. I mean, I think if you have a religion, you should just, no matter what it is, you should try to stay close to it. You know, and this is a terrible trend.
To have faith in something, right? I mean, I can understand that point as well. So this is kind of the life that you've led. You're also artistic. You are a musician, yeah, right? You've got all this going on in your life. You're seeing in this kind of dark, seedier underworld life that you know not been a part of before, but you're seeing this in the nightclubs, how people are and how they react to each other. Is it hard when you're watching people like this and you see their lives collapsing, even though you're doing prayer
and you try
in their way? I mean, is it hard to watch this and not feel kind of despair leaking into your own life?
That's true in a way. And you try to talk to these people about going back to their religion and getting closer to God, you know, they laugh at you. Even my own nephews laugh at me, and everything that I say is stories that that people made up to frighten them so they will go to, you know, stay with God, like this, they call it this made up deity. We made them up, and to frighten people to do good things instead of, you know, be evil. So that's how they believe. And then they would laugh at me when I would tell them things. This one man that I told you that he died of the cancer. I didn't talk to him a lot about it, but once in a while when we would talk about it, he was very mad that we would talk about it and say really horrible things about God and everything else that was holy, that I didn't want to really talk to him that much about, because I didn't want to bring this out of him. You know, I didn't want to bring this out of him. He was a funny guy otherwise, other than this aspect of him. You know what I mean? But I know when you try to talk to people, they're so, you know, their heart is so like stone. And this is like the worst way to leave this earth, with hate in your heart. I mean, that's like you're heading that direction, because, well, we'll talk about it later, but that's what these things are made out of. They're made out of hate. And if you have, you don't want to leave this, you don't want to leave here with hate in your heart, because it's hate, you know, it's heavy. It brings you down. You know, you got to take, you can't fly unless you take yourself lightly. You know what I mean? It's going to just drag you down. And it's bad for your health too, having all this, you know, hate your brother or your sister or some other people's religion or right. nationality, or it hurts you more than anything.
It eats you like a cancer, right? Hate is just a cancer that'll eat through your soul and take away your joy. Now, when you're looking back at this and you're doing all this prayer and intercession on other people's behalfs, did you ever feel that maybe there was another side that was not real happy that you were doing this work? Were you ever aware or cognizant of that, or again, did that just never play into your mind?
Well, that's interesting that you brought that up, because when we actually get to the apparition that manifested itself in this house, I don't want to, you know, tell you now, but it spoke about that. So, but the other thing that
you were in their crosshairs. They were aware of you and were not real happy that you were doing the work you were doing. So that comes into play a little bit later on in this. Okay. And I appreciate that kind of setup. Right. So gives us a little bit of a taste for this and, you know, exactly why you would be picked. And again, I want to know, before we get into the full blown story of your experience, and as we're doing this setup, what I'm curious about is, does it leave you wondering why someone like you, who does good things and helps, would be allowed to be messed with? Why wouldn't there be some kind of veil of protection around the guy who's praying and doing the good work, you know, to help others?
Yeah, that's a very excellent question, and I'll explain that to you when we talk about this apparition, because I'll show you why it couldn't do what I probably wanted to do. But you did bring up my artwork. I just wanted to say something about that, because it's a quick, interesting story about that. Because I'm an artist and I could just draw and sketch and sculpt things, I was able to draw this apparition exactly how it looks. And if you went to my website, john-egan.com, you could see the actual drawing picture of what I saw. And it's fullness over there. But I mean, you say I was actually in USA Today, which is a paper that goes all around the world. Many national magazines and newspapers, and Ripley's, believe it or not, I'm in a 218 edition. My wife collects candles from the church, right? And she was keeping them in the basement, and I said to her one day, what are you keeping all these candles for? Aren't you supposed to throw them out? She said, oh, they're so special, they kept Jesus company. I couldn't throw them out. You're an artist, do something with them. So I took them. You can see this on that website, too. I put some of it there. I melted them all down, and because I can do this, I have a talent for it. I could sculpt out this most beautiful, gorgeous life-size bust of Jesus that got into every single newspaper and magazine. As I said, USA Today, which is the biggest thing, and you know, goes all over the world, put a whole page of me in front of my statue there, which was nice. But the other thing I wanted to say was a lot of churches asked me to come to bring it there, and when I have time, I do. And but when I really because you know, I go like to 11 o'clock mass, and as I said, there's not that many people there. But I have to, when I go, I have to be with the statue the whole time, and that's when I realize that there's not that many people going to church anymore, because I'm there from every mass, because the people want to, you know, I get to talk about it a little bit. They come out and look at it and take pictures of it. You know, it's nice. It's wonderful for them because it's such an inspiring piece of artwork. But that's when I realized, where are all the people? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm there for 6 o'clock mass and 7 and 8 and 9. And it used to be packed, but now it's just, you know, that's when I really got the idea that people are drifting away. But anyway, this is a beautiful
Did you just drop a little bomb on us? You're in the Guinness Book of World Records for 2018?
Ripley's Believe It or Not, Ripley's 2018. Not. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And what was the, yeah, what was that? Was that because of the statue that you made with the candles?
Yeah, it was. It's one of a kind in the whole world, and they picked up on it, and they wanted to buy it and put it in their museums. But I wasn't going to. It's not for sale. I like it too much. I look at it every day. I look at my own artwork more than I should probably, but I enjoy looking at it. But when I get tired of looking at it, maybe I will, you know, sell it to a museum at some point. But they wanted to buy it, and I wouldn't sell. So they came here and they drew it. So if you go on the Ripley's Believe It or Not website and John Egan Wax Bust, actually if you can just Google John Egan Wax Bust of Jesus, you'll see it there. But it got into every national TV and magazine, and it was really it was a wonderful thing that the secular world, you know, accepted it like that. And I was very happy about that. But since you brought up my artwork, I just thought I would.
Right, and we do have, for those of you interested, we do have the link to John's website, to his book and information right on our post today. So just make sure you check it. You'll be able to link and be able to go find him and order his book, get the full story that way as well.
Right, yes.
Sorry, I went into a bit of a coughing jag there, so I had to mute my microphone for a second. All right, so let's... Let's start to set this table and get this story shared with everybody. And we do have Theater of the Mind, brand new one coming out. That's really kind of chilling, especially if you're a parent out there. This one will unnerve you a little bit. So we've got that coming up in a bit as well. And again, I just want to remind everybody to check out Coast to Coast AM. I'll be on hosting tonight and tomorrow, Friday and Saturday night, March 9th and 10th, or 10th and 11th, depending on how you look at it. We start midnight central till 4 a.m. Tonight, we'll be talking with Nick Redfern about Slender Man and 2 hours of open phone lines. God knows what we'll hear from the audience of Coast to Coast AM with their own weird experiences with the supernatural. That's tonight. And tomorrow night, I'll be back on. We'll be talking UFOs and more on Coast to Coast AM. You can find information at coasttocoastam.com. And check out the stations, upcoming shows, all the information right there. Or you can stream the show live tonight and tomorrow from knsiradio.com. Or you can get the KNSI Radio app for your phones and be able to stream it right from all of your smartphones and devices. All right, John, now that we're getting to this point, tell me a little bit about your family dynamic first. Are you married, children? What's going on in your world?
Yeah, I live in New Jersey. I'm married. I have three boys. I've been married about 20. I've been living in this house for a little over 20 years, and it's a beautiful home, and it's in a beautiful neighborhood, and it's just been fine, and my wife is a nice lady, and she also is involved with the church, so she does work for the church, too. So so thank God. We don't argue. I don't know why, but I didn't know a lot of couples argue, but I don't know anything to argue about. So
See, I think your next book has got to be a relationship book then, because what we see on TV, New Jersey couples are always fighting out there, John. I don't know what you're doing right, but you need to teach some people, because there's a lot of people on that wrong path as well. All right, so you've got... You've got a family situation there. You've got a nice home. Everything is just kind of very status quo. It's very even. Now, children, do you have children?
Yeah, I have three boys. All three of them graduated college, and my one son, he graduated college. Yeah, he got a good job, but then he said, you know, but then we had like that. My wife had that emptiness kind of a syndrome, right, where everybody left, and we have a big home. And so he called me and said, "Dad, you know, can I move? I want to start my own business. Can I move?" Because I live in a ranch. That'll be relevant to the story later. And we live on a hill, so the garages are underneath the house, and the basement is underneath the house. And then so there's a big garages and big basement. So my one son, who wanted to have his own, there's plenty of bedrooms up there, but he wanted to have like his own apartment downstairs. So I put half the basement and made an apartment down there. But he's since moved out, and my other son wanted to move into that apartment and start his own business, and he's been here for about a year now, which has been great for my wife, because now we have somebody to come up and eat dinner with us, and you know what I mean? Right. It's just have another person back in the house, you know, it was great for my wife. So now it's just me and my wife, and my son lives downstairs, and that's relevant to the story, too, what we're going to talk about, what he encountered, too, while this thing was in the house. You know?
All right.
So that's how it is right.
So we've set the stage, folks. We will continue with his story. Without any further ado, it's time to go into the Dark Hives, Theater of the Mind. This is my room. A real story shared by Mike and Connie Sellers. This is the moment that changed my life and made me a believer in all things paranormal. We had rented a house for a month in New Jersey while I was temporarily stationed there for work. I had never had anything I would even call close to a paranormal experience. It just wasn't part of my world. I never looked for it, never noticed it, and never believed it was anything more than Hollywood creations to sell another movie ticket in October. The house itself was nice. Nothing stood out about it. It didn't look creepy or foreboding, just your regular run-of-the-mill house. For the first couple of weeks, that is. Looking back at it through fresh eyes, my wife and I can say there were a few weird instances of things, like setting things down and finding them in a totally different place, far from where we had set them originally. There were noises that we always attributed to just the old house settling, but nothing dark or malevolent. It was just more annoying. Our son at the time was 18 months old, and we had been blessed with a child that slept peacefully through the night, within weeks of bringing him home. With that said, within 2 weeks of moving in, he would cry out at night, sometimes screaming bloody murder for no reason at all, and then falling into a deep sleep. And I mean deep, motionless bouts of sleep. We chalked the crying and screaming up to the changes in the move. I just don't think he was used to things yet. One night, long after everyone had settled in for the night, I made my way down for the kitchen for a quick glass of milk or whiskey. I can't recall exactly, but it was definitely to wet my whistle before bed, nonetheless. As I passed my son's room, I stopped in my tracks. There was what sounded like a low, murmuring voice from inside his room, like an adult male talking low, trying not to be heard. I tried to make sense of the sound, thinking it must be my son snoring or maybe mumbling in his sleep, which would be weird enough as he barely spoke when he was awake, and his voice was nowhere near that deep. I reached for the knob and slowly turned it. The door popped open, and with a gentle creak, it opened, exposing the light from the hallway into the room, which, upon opening the door, felt like air conditioning was on high and blew out at me. For the record, the air conditioning was not on. The room itself was silent. The murmuring voice silenced. I continued down to get a drink and on my way back to my room stopped to listen again. But there was nothing but the occasional sound of my son moving in his crib. The next morning I told my wife what had happened and she froze. She told me she had heard the same thing days earlier. But it was during the day and our son was not in the room. She assumed she had just overheard voices from outside that came through his window. But now she was unsettled, because once I brought it to her attention, she said the voice was
very deep, dark, and it mumbled in a voice that was barely audible. She couldn't make out any specifics either, just that it was a man in a hushed, dark, mumbly voice. Another week had passed, and things started getting weirder in the house, doors slamming day and night, especially around my son's room. We finally decided to keep him in our room for a few nights, and the noises stopped. On one of our last nights there, we'd gone out for drinks with a few friends from work and had come back to the house, gave them the tour, and as all of us were walking into the living room, every door in the hall behind us began to slam shut. First, our master bedroom. Then the bathroom. My son's room came next. And then the study. Our friends stood motionless. And that's when my pal Jim stammered, what caused that to happen? You could hear the crack in his uneasy voice, hoping I was about to tell him a very rational explanation, which did not come. We filled them in on the changes and overall weirdness we had felt in the house, and had settled in to enjoy a few glasses of wine together. And that's when we all heard the banging. It started slowly, like someone rapping the wooden floor in a firm but quiet bang. Then it started getting louder. The banging was deep and sounded, how do I put this, mad. We were all horrible adults as we sat there silently listening to the noises coming from down the hall. Sounds we were all pretty sure were originating in my young son's room. I tried to put everyone at ease. And it's probably just my son. He heard us out here having fun and talking, and he's probably banging the wall to get our attention. We exchanged uneasy glances, all hoping that that was the case. I stood up slowly and said, I'll go check. Jim's wife, Marianne, stepped up and offered to check with me. I glanced back at Jim, and he gave me a reassuring glance and said, you take her. I'm sure as hell not going. A comment that was met by a small outburst of nervous laughter from all of us. I started my trek down the hall, Marianne at my side, and we stood outside my son's room, where just moments ago we heard the banging. Now it was silent. Then the low, grumbly voice began speaking. We couldn't understand what was being said, but we could hear the voice coming from inside his room. I looked to Marianne and mouthed, are you hearing this? In mostly pantomime. She nodded, her eyes as big as dinner plates. I took a breath, and I grabbed the doorknob and gave the door a shove. It swung open to reveal my son, standing with his back to us in his crib. He stood there, not making a noise or a move. Hey, little man, everything okay? I called out as I reached for his light switch. I gave it a flick, but nothing happened. Marianne slid behind me, looking over my shoulder. I clicked the switch a few more times without any luck. The light must have burned out. That's when we heard the voice, low and grumbly. It spoke out from inside my son's room.
This is not his room. This is my room.
The voice barked in a deep, resounding cackle. I thought someone had to be playing a joke on us. My feet were like lead when I tried to convince myself to go in the room to check on my son.
What do you two want now?
The voice bellowed. Marianne let go of my arm, turned, and headed with purpose down the hall. I heard her say in a very controlled yet stern voice to Jim, come on, we're leaving. Now. And with that, they did. I stepped into the room, my mind numb, my heart racing, but I had to know my son was okay. He stood there, back to me, unmoving. When I got to the mid part of his room, the door behind me slammed with a real force, and the room got so damn cold, I could swear I saw my breath. My wife had scrambled down the hall and was standing outside the room when she called out, "Is everything okay in there?" My son turned around slowly to face me. His normally sweet little face was contorted, and when he opened his mouth, the voice barked back.
"No, everything is not okay. This is my room."
I swear by everything holy, I had no words. I felt like I was moving in slow motion, wanting to grab my son and in the same instance wanting to punch him in the head and run for the hills. I looked him in his very angry face, and as calmly as I could, I said, "Okay, we'll leave. We'll take him out of here right now, and we will not bother you again. Just let me have my son." Within seconds, my son's face reverted back to his normally sweet demeanor, and he put his arms out beckoning for me to pick him up. I love my son with every part of my heart, but picking him up and holding him close was going to be the scariest thing I ever did. Then he collapsed into a heap on the bed. I reached down and I lifted him. He began to cry. I drew him close to my body and I backed towards the door. Slowly I reached back, grabbed the knob, and gave it a yank. The door swung open effortlessly, and I joined my terrified wife in the hall. We clutched our son and stared into the darkened abyss of his room when a loud, wailing moan burst towards us, and the door slammed so hard it created a massive breeze. We made our way back to the living room, where the rest of our guests still sat and stood in utter horror. One by one, they grabbed their belongings and made their way out of the house as fast as they could. We didn't sleep that night. We just laid intertwined in each other's arms, waiting for the safety of daylight. A few hours into our vigil, my cell began ringing. I lifted it to my ear, and it was Jim. "Hey, man, we're home. I'm sorry we left so quickly. I wanted to invite you to join us, but Marianne insisted we didn't want to bring anything home with us from your place. I'm so sorry. I'm glad you're okay, though. Why don't you get out of there and go to a hotel?" And I assured him that we were fine and we would be leaving soon enough. Truth was, we just didn't want to walk past that damn room again. In the safety of the sunlit morning, I got up my courage, decided to go to my son's room to get the things out of his room and bring them into ours. And wouldn't you know it, the knob wouldn't turn. There was no lock. It was like something was holding that knob from inside, unwilling to let us in. When we moved out a few days later, we left everything in his room, right where we had set it. We took everything else we had brought with, but we could not get that damn door to open again to gain entrance. The door simply would not budge.
Podcast compels you! The power of podcast compels you!
Beyond the Darkness is your podcast now. And iTunes.
We're back. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. And hey, how would you like to get out and see the world with me, your old pal Darkness Dave? Well, it's real simple. Go check out darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. I'll be going all over the United States and around the world. This year we're going to go out to Romania, where we get to see some of the most beautiful and historic sites ever. So join us on the trail of Dracula. We get to follow in the footsteps of the real Vlad the Impaler, hearing the real history behind the stories and unveiling the mysteries that we've often been told may not be as true as you once thought. So check it out and come on out and enjoy yourselves with us. We've got a great family that tours with us every year of friends and people from across the nation and around the world, and they'll be on this trip. We're damn near close to sold out. We're about 3/4 of the way sold out on this trip already for Romania. We'd love for you to join us on that. Or you can come see us at any one of the other great events that we'll be a part of this year. We have one coming up very soon as well that we're going to be adding to Tombstone, Arizona. We'll be going there for the 25th anniversary of the movie Tombstone. Michael Biehn will be joining, and we'll be doing a live broadcast from Tombstone at the Birdcage Theater. We've got that coming up and more. So keep checking out Darkness Events. .com. That's darknessevents.com for more information. Between Love and Hate, The Devil is Real. John Egan, my guest today. All right, John, let's start this story. Now, we've set the plate. Your wife, yourself, your son all live in this home. And how does this begin for you? Where does the supernatural rear its ugly head?
Well, first, I'd like to say that we're all skeptics, I'm sure, all of us, you know. And one person can have a hallucination. It could be from, like, you know, you're allergic to some kind of drug you're taking or medication or alcohol. And you know, this could cause people to have a hallucination, right? And we all think sometimes when we hear that they just had a hallucination, okay. But, like, if two people can't have the same hallucination, like if you took something and I took something exactly the same, we could never have the same hallucination. You know what I'm saying?
I demand proof.
Any psychiatrist.
I demand proof.
Yeah. Tom.
Let's take something together and see what we see.
That's funny.
Right. So, I agree. I get your point. Right. One person can have a hallucination.
Yeah.
Now, there has been talk of mass hallucination, but from my understanding, it's a term that's thrown around, but there's no scientific proof backing the fact that a mass hallucination can actually take effect. So I get you on that, right?
Right.
But this is something that maybe one person, maybe you're by yourself, you could be fallible and think that you're having a one-off mistaken visual conception. Okay, I get that. But in this case, there's not one of you, but there's three of you total, correct?
Experience the same, same thing. Yeah. So what happened? Well, I mean, you know, like I sit on my, I have a sectional in the living room, and I, like everybody else does, and I sit there, and that's where I say my prayers. So I say my prayers there, and for me, I use the rosary, so that's relevant to the story too. So I say them, and then one afternoon, nobody's home except me. I could hear down the. I'm in the living room. There's a kitchen right next to me. The steps that go downstairs to the basement. There's a the metal door that separates the garages and the basement and my son's apartment down there. And I could hear, you know, somebody comes in, usually. But this one time, I stopped for a minute, and I hear the basement door so, like, slam, like, really, really hard. This was my first visit with this apparition. So I think it's like, I know my wife can't even slam the door that hard. I know somebody would come home that mad, like my son had a car accident or something, and he'd be that mad to slam the door that hard. So I get up and to see what's the problem with him. And I call down the steps, and it's still dark down there because usually he puts the lights on. And then I go down the steps, and I look at the door, and it's fine. I look around, I turn all the lights on, I go in his apartment, turn the lights on, and everything's fine. And I'm thinking, that was weird. I have surveillance cameras here, so I look outside, I go back in time a little bit to see if anybody was on the property. Nobody was on the property, none of the doors outside or garage doors opened. So I'm thinking to myself, that was weird, that noise of somebody slamming the door, like, because I know what that door sounds like. It's a metal door, and it's this very distinct noise. So that was my first visit that this creature probably, that's when it probably came in. So I didn't say anything to anybody because I didn't know what to say, you know, what to do. And then it was quiet for a while. And then I was here.
Now, you said you do a lot of prayer and you work in the rosary. You have an experience like that. Are you praying for blessings and protection over your home?
Yeah, of course. I'm mostly praying for whatever heaven needs to do with these prayers, anyhow. But so now I hear some like heavy footsteps on the steps from the basement to the kitchen. And nobody, my son's not, I'm on 170, my son's probably 170, my wife's probably 130. Nobody weighs that much to make that kind of noise on the steps. So I hear something walking up the steps, walking through the kitchen, and I call out again, Johnny, you know, Lillian, you know, so I get up again, I look, and now there's nothing there. So now I, you know, you get that eerie feeling that something is wrong. You know, this is not right. I've been living here so long, I would know. Just like my wife said when she heard these noises, I'm here, I raised three kids here, I know every single noise in this house. So then I hear noises like, I have a long hallway behind me that goes to the bedrooms, and it's mostly tiled. So I hear something heavy walking on the tiles, you know, back to the bedrooms, and I hear one of the bedroom doors slam, and I hear this, all of the bedrooms have like those mirror closet doors that slide back and forth. So I could hear that sliding back and forth. So now I decide I better check everything. So I get my flashlight and I check everywhere, under every bed and every closet, and I kind of felt that I knew. What, there was something in this house, but I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to frighten my wife, or, you know, I don't know if my son would be frightened, but I didn't want to say anything. But then when I went to work, she would call me and say, there's something in this house, you know, there's something weird going on in this house, and I didn't want to say what I thought it was. So I didn't say anything. I was like, all right, well, we'll see. So days would go by, and then I would go to work, and it seems like when we were alone, this thing would manifest itself, you know. That you couldn't see it yet, but all you could do is hear it, you know what I mean? And I would hear, like, I'd be sitting on the sectional and where I usually sit, and I would hear something really heavy breathing behind me, you know. And then I would turn around, and there'd be nothing there. So I kind of knew there was something wrong. And then, again, my wife would complain to me. To son, you know, why, can you check in the attic? Maybe something, a big animal got up there or something like that. And I said, oh, I never heard anything up in the attic. But I went up in the attic, looked everywhere. I mean, I have mouse traps up there. If there was an animal, I would eat the cheese, right, wouldn't you think? No, that didn't happen. So I didn't know what to do. I go, you don't know. I don't think anybody knows what to do. So we just went along with it, and a couple of days would be silent here. I do have a beach house down in Long Beach Island. So in the summertime, we would go, me and my wife would go down to the beach house. My other family members would meet the day. We'd stay there for the weekend and stuff. My son would be home alone. Now he calls down there and says, you know, I'm in the basement, and I'm hearing walking and noises and doors slamming upstairs. So I go upstairs and I look around, and there's nothing there. And then I hear it down in my apartment. He goes, I hear doors slamming, and he has a glass mirrored closet door too. And when it slides back and forth, he says, I could hear it sliding, like violently sliding back and forth and back and forth. And he says, what's going on? And that's when I knew it was something. I'd have to do something. So my wife said to me, no, we're going to talk about this when we get back home. And I was like, okay, we will. So we go home, and my wife said to me, there's something really evil in this house. We had to do something about it. And I was like, well, what do you do about it? I mean, we belong to the church over here. I know the priest there, right? And they know us as a normal family, right? So, I mean, I mean, we have like a garden party here every beginning of the summer. They come, and, you know, and we have also, my wife has a group that meets here. He comes, the priest come and have coffee and stuff and talk. So they know me as a normal human being. And how do I go to him and tell him, you know, there's something evil in my house? I sound like a crazy person, right? Wouldn't you think? Dave, I mean,
let's face it, the whole jux for priests, and I wish people would get over that fear of going and asking for help from religious leaders, because listen, the Bible talks about this. They talk about demons and infestations and dark energies and malevolent spirits. So this is part of their culture, and they are aware of it. I know we all feel like, oh, I'm going to sound like a nutbag bringing this into them, but hey, they're the ones that are prepped for this. They're the ones that have been studying this book and this culture their whole life. I think they're the best people to bring it to.
That's true. And I'd never had the full apparition yet, so it still was like in my mind, like, Okay, I mean, my wife thinks it's something evil. My own son, who is a logical man, is you're talking like, you know, crazy. Like, what's going on at this house? I mean, I never heard these kind of noise. Like, why would it come upstairs if this thing is downstairs? You know, so I wasn't, how can you be positive about something like this unless you actually saw it? So I wasn't positive. So I said to my wife, okay, you know, we had this house blessed when we first moved. It was a brand new home. We moved into it and we had it blessed. Maybe we should have the house blessed or something. Or she said, maybe we should have like an exorcism done here or something. And I was like, I don't know if I want to go that far. You know what I mean? Well, how would you think, Dave? Like, would you, like, as a man, you would like, okay, yeah, there is something. You know, I don't know.
You're asking a guy in a unique position whose job it is a radio show host of the paranormal. So yeah, I would go get help right away. But you know, for the most part, I understand. Layman like yourself out there, this isn't something that was part of your world. You didn't expect anything like this. You don't want to feel like you can't help take control and protect your family. I understand that aspect of it.
Yeah. And then you know we heard about angels, we heard about devils, we just heard, you know, we think it's so far off somewhere, you know, it's not like it's going to be involved in your life at all. It's just like the other side of the universe, right? When you think about devils and stuff, like, you don't really know, you know, think you're going to be involved with them. I mean, you hear stories about it, and you're not even sure when you hear these stories, you know, what is it? You know, what could it possibly be? But, well, then I'll tell you exactly what happened. So we're deciding whether we should have a priest come and bless the house or maybe do like an exorcism or something like that. And one afternoon again, I say my rosary, And I sit at the sectional, and I have a glass table next to me. I put my rosary down there. And I stop for a second, and then all of a sudden, the air next to me, about a 5 by 5 foot area, starts to get wavy and starts to ripple. Like if you throw a rock into a water, and you see how that ripples? This is what I started to see. From the corner of my eye, and then I looked at it, and then it was a blue flame. It wasn't like when people see, they claim they see earth and hell, and it's red flames. This wasn't red flames. These flames were blue. So the whole wall, there was a whole wall of blue flames there. And Now I'm pretty sure I know what's going on at this point.
Right. How do you react to this? I mean, this is something beyond, even as an artist, this is something beyond normal and visionary. You're seeing something like this unfold right in front of your eyes. How is this impacting you?
The weird thing was that I don't know if I was a little bit shocked, but I didn't feel fear at all. And then it's a whole wall of blue flames. And then I see these protrusions coming through the blue flames, like slowly. You know, you ever go to a board meeting and everybody there is fidgeting and they're getting their book work done, you know, they're getting their work done. And then the CEO or the owner walks in, you know how they walk in? They walk in with authority and they own the room. They go slowly, they come in. Right. This is how this thing was coming into my house. At first I saw like these horns coming in, because it had very long horns from the front of its head, and then its face came through, and it stopped there, and it just stopped there and looked at me. So I got up off the chair, and I stood about 4 or 5 feet away from it, and it just had like black eyes. Because I'm an artist, I was able to depict what I saw. So I'm seeing these flames, but I can't like smell anything burning, right? I can't see what's causing it to become flames, like wood or something like that. You know, what's making this fire? And it's blue. And the thing, because I was more concerned about this fire, and the thing told me this kind of a fire will only affect your spirit. So I didn't have to, it wasn't going to burn me, you know what I mean? So I got that right away from it. So I knew that I didn't have to worry, but, you know, get burning up. And it wasn't, the thing was weird because there's so many things that happened at this time. I'm looking at a full apparition. I'm looking at something that probably was something really powerful back when it was an angel. I would imagine if you believe the stories that these things were created powerful. This thing looked powerful. It looked like as powerful as a lion that was looking at you that could just devour you in a second. It looked like that. It was total and pure hatred. I don't know how to explain that. It was total, and that's what it's what it is. It's hatred. That's what it is. It's pure 100% hatred, not like 99.9, just 100% hatred. And it just stood there looking at me. It's hard to even tell this story, but so.
Are you starting to feel fear welling up inside you? I mean, you're facing a supernatural element. You're facing something ancient beyond time.
Yeah.
And you know in your heart of hearts that this thing is from the demonic realm. Is this?
Oh yeah, for sure.
And remove the bravado, but I mean, are you feeling any fear in this, or is it more of this sense of awe and confusion?
I was, I kind of knew why it was here now. It was moving its mouth, but I was like, it told me that the flames were only going to affect, it can only affect your spirit. You know what I mean? So it was giving me information. But I also want to tell you what it said, more of what it said, but I did want to say what I'm looking at. So I'm looking at this powerful creature that probably was something great at one point, but it's still powerful now. It still rules. It's living in its domain. It owns its space. You know what I'm saying? And this flame around it was just to this creature. It was like if you were put somewhere that you didn't deserve to be put, you would be complaining about it constantly, right? Wouldn't you think? If you were like put in jail and you didn't do the crime,
right,
you would be constantly, you know, this thing, it owned it. This fire was just to this thing. And the thing that I couldn't figure out was it wasn't like burning, like his skin wasn't burned. I don't know how to explain that either, to be honest with you. I could tell you what I could, then you could decipher what
right. No, I know.
You get from it.
It sounds maddening, right? But I get the idea that it was, in your estimation, this thing was a commanding presence, and the fire that it wielded was not a burning flame. It was a flame that bent to his will. And this flame was not something that was a physical heat source that was at, but it was something that was more of a spiritual element that would be the only thing that would affect your soul.
Yeah. It came to me that this fire was God's burning, I guess, hatred for sin. I guess that's it, because it wasn't, nothing was, you know, it wasn't like a wood pile somewhere. You know what I mean? It was just, it just was another miracle. Like, we have fire on earth, and it serves a purpose. It keeps us warm. We cook with it. You could melt steel with it. You could melt two different steels with it and get it like a third steel that's even stronger. I mean, it has a purpose here, and this fire also has a purpose, you know, and it's for the spiritual world. And it's their empire. I mean, this devil, you know, this creature, whatever it was, this is his empire. This is what he is always going to be and always will be there. And that's what, and he would like everybody else to be there with him. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's to, because that's how they get even with God or something like that, or it's just because that's his empire. And that's what, the more the merrier.
I hear hell is like a multi-level marketing plan. He's just trying to get as many people underneath him so he can make more money on top. That's all it's about.
Let me tell you about Amway, John. I'm glad I've got your attention here. And have your carpets really ever been cleaned? Let me show you my new unit. Right. I get that. So you've got this going on. Now, this is just you alone witnessing this being?
Yeah. This is me with it. And so I get the idea that, okay, this is its domain. This is its empire. It's not like, you know, when you hear all these other kind of visitations from devil, they're jumping around and screaming and roaring and all these other things, you know, and wild. This wasn't wild. This was like a logical apparition. You know, it was intelligent. I could see how intelligent, but it was powerful. And there's legions of them, you know, and they're after our souls, and they don't want anything to interfere with that. And the fact that it said no more to me, it didn't say what no more. I couldn't figure out if it meant no more souls you're going to take, or no more prayers. I'll tell you when it left, and you might understand a little bit better. But so it told me that no more. It was saying no more. So I couldn't figure out what I didn't at that time. I just wanted to remember this. I was trying to etch this in my mind because I know I'm an artist. I could depict it later on, you know, if I survive it. But I realized that it only seemed to be allowed to protrude that far. Like it didn't come all the way through, you know, right? And it stayed in its blue flames. It's all I saw was his head and part of his neck. And it didn't seem like it could go any further. So that's what kind of made me feel a little okay about it. It wasn't going to come. It looked all like right. It could tear you apart in a second.
Did you feel at any point, did you feel like, oh, crap, this is my day. My bell has been rung and somebody's come to get me. Did that ever cross your mind?
That didn't cross my mind at all. I kind of knew what it was going to be.
You're a good guy. You're a good guy with good family values, a good relationship. So that didn't cross your mind. A guy in a blue flame shows up in my living room and I'm going to think, oh, shit.
This is it.
This is how I go out, John.
But I did see that. This thing was capable of creating this. I mean, it's so powerful. It could create at this dimension. Okay, it brought like you know, if you were like me, and like we discussed earlier, you know, they were cast out of heaven and sent to hell. So what are they doing roaming the earth here? But this creature is roaming the earth. Also, it's brought its own hell with it. So it's really in hell roaming the earth. It's hard. It's another thing hard to explain. It brought its, you know what I mean? It brought its hell with it. So that's how that's how I perceived it. That's the only way I could explain it.
Right, because I would guess, since officially in the books of the Bible, hell does not exist till the end of time, hell must be with these beings until that moment, right?
And why is blue? That was another thing that I kept thinking about.
Blue is when it burns the hottest, right? The white flame, that's when that's natural gas, and I think when it's burning at its hottest, so that might be what... I don't know. Maybe that's just it. I don't know. It is fascinating. Okay, so it confronts you. Yeah. I get you're getting all the visceral aspect of this. Does it speak to you, John? Is it like, hey, you want to make some s'mores, or is it just wanting to terrify you just by showing itself?
No, I don't know if it wanted to terrify me. It was terrifying looking.
Right.
I guess it morphs from something beautiful to his creature with like all these horns coming out of his head. His head, the top of his head was like anything I could describe it. Well, I tried to draw it as. Have you ever seen those horseshoe crabs on the beach? That's what the top of his head was made out of.
Okay.
And it was.
So he was a handsome devil.
Yeah, you can say that, yeah. Yeah, so it told me that I didn't have to work. The flames would only affect you spiritually, and then no more. So I could only interpret that as no more souls. Because when we die, we're going to go on a journey. And if we're not really close to God, we're going to have to probably be confronted with these things. Like, they're not going to be like crazy jumping around and screaming at you. Like they're intelligent. So they're going to seduce you. Like if you leave, like we talked earlier, with hate in your heart, that's where they exist. They're 100% hate. And if you have hate in your heart, you hate your brother or your sister, like we said earlier, or your neighbor or something like that, and you can't get that out of your heart, he's going to work with that. He's going to seduce you with that hatred. He's going to show you his empire built on hatred. And he told me that the only way you can alleviate pain is through hatred. I mean, he's going to be able to, and it's going to be just like, you're going to be alone, you know, but not like a human. You're going to be alone as a spirit, and these creatures that are intelligent and organized are going to be, I guess, get around you and start explaining to you the wonders of their empire, you know what I mean, and showing you that if you do have hatred in your heart, you could work with that there. And then
You're a visual guy, John, and I got to be honest with you. As you describe that to me, I'm immediately hit with the visceral image of Jacob Marley from Christmas Carol. And when you think about this, all the all the links and chains that are wrapped around him, and that's all the hate and the anger and the pettiness and the rage and the greed, and it's all of that. And look, you're linking all these chains. It's going to make it easier for them to have something to grab onto and pull you down. If you live in a better place, in a place of light and loving and caring, those chains are not available for them. There's not that element that they can get their hands wrapped around to bring you down. It's going to make that job even harder.
I know. They're going to be able to bewitch your spirit once you pass here without a relationship with God. They're going to be able to snare you. I mean, they're going to seduce, entice, and beguile your spirit down there because they can do that. And you're going to be with this this creature is so intelligent, and it's been since the beginning of time. It has more experience, you know, than anything we could ever deal with. It's organized, and you're going to be just alone. You know, when you die, your spirit is going to be just alone being confronted with these things, and it could possibly somehow. I mean, it looked like such a. I mean, like when this apparition was, this whole thing was in my house, it's just like one little step and you're there. You know what I mean? It's just like it's right there. Like I said earlier, you think it's hell, it's like some other place far, you know, across the universe somewhere, or who knows where it is, the Netherlands or wherever they say it, but it just seems like one little step and you could be right in there. And then these people these demons trying to seduce you and beguile you, you might not have much of a chance there. You know what I'm saying? And then you're going to, I don't know if I always thought, honestly, these flames was fucking like burn you, like, you know, but it, I guess they do in some other sense, you know what I mean? Some other spiritual sense, because this demon was not, his skin wasn't burnt. I mean, you know what I mean?
It yielded to him. It yielded to him. It was something that was outside of his. I wonder if that's almost like what we see as our aura, our energetic field. That's just their energetic field. So you have this first initial encounter with this full blown character. Now you said, on your own, this could be a hallucination. So how many times do you end up being confronted by this being?
That was the only time. That was the one time that it was. And then and I got this information from it. And as I said earlier, that no more. They didn't explain that.
Did your son see it at that point or no?
No, No, we all experienced the thing in the house, you know, at the same time. Like I said earlier, I could be having a hallucination, but me and my wife and my son can't have the same hallucination of something slamming the door and walking. You know what I mean? But exactly the same hallucination. That's impossible. Even if we took a drug, we'd all have the different separate kind. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be the exact same thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it was here. It was here, and it was intended I guess scare me off, I would imagine, or why would it, you know, tell me to stop, that they don't want any souls being saved, or that you can save souls with your prayers, you could actually save them. I mean, you know, maybe that when you do pray and for some soul and you ask God, like, you know, don't send them into hell just yet, and you know, I'll pray for as long as I live here. As long as I'm alive, and if it's enough, maybe it's enough. If it's not, it's not. But maybe I think they do hold them. I think they do hold back on, you know, these creatures going to hell. Maybe there's so much unknown out there that, you know, in this world that we don't know about. I just got like the veil was just pulled back a little bit for me to see through, you know, see this world that not many people see. I don't think that many people, I mean, people are visited by devils. I've heard that in the past. So usually they're screaming and running around and roaring. You know, this was nothing like, this was such an intelligent creature. It was pure hatred though. I mean, it had black eyes and it was just pure. It was blue too. I don't know how to explain that either. I really don't know why it was blue, and I'm not sure. I guess there's no oxygen in hell, maybe, and there's no. Well, I guess the red flames are from. I guess, you know what I'm saying? I don't know, and it's a miracle in itself. These flames are, and this place is, I guess, built by God. I would think. That's the only thing I could think, and it's a place where these creatures go. and I guess some of us will eventually go. But it's terrible to think that you would be, because you can't die anymore. You go there, you cross that chasm.
Why do you think it's giving you the heads up, though, John? Why wouldn't they wait till you're dead so they can put these seduction thoughts in your mind and try to steal you away? Why would they give you the heads up this is what's coming? Doesn't that seem like, A, maybe they're lying to you, maybe they're tricking you with that, or B, it seems counterproductive for, you know, if the devil's trying to collect souls, giving you the heads up on how he's going to do it might be the dumbest plan on earth.
That's what I thought, too. I really did think that, too. But I don't think I will reach that many people where it will make a big difference for him and their empire. You know what I mean? That they own, like I said earlier, they own, you know, this is just to them. They own it. They're going to exist here forever. They're pure hatred and they're intelligent. It's so it's something that you don't ever want to get near. You know what I mean? So. Should I tell you what happened before it left? Or?
Nah, we're going to end up the show. I don't want to know the rest of the story. Yeah, of course, John. Let me know what happened next. We're not going to leave people hanging. All right, so you see this. How does it – does it just disappear? Does it evaporate? What happens?
Yeah, so I got that – you know, I was worried about the flames. It kind of wanted me to look through the flames a little bit. To up on its right side, upper right side, the flames sort of moved. I kind of could almost see through. I guess he wanted me to see through. He wanted me to see that maybe it's not that bad in there. Some, you know what I mean? Because he knew I was a little bit preoccupied with these flames. So he wanted me to kind of see what its empire back there. And I think that's what it does to souls when they're dead. It's going to show you. You know that your hatred is good. You come with us. You know you could forever. You're gonna use this hatred. And it's gonna alleviate your pain. That's what it was trying to explain to me. That you know your hatred is a good thing, and that's the only way to alleviate your pain. So I guess people who hate a lot, and these people do hate a lot. I mean, these creatures hate. I guess they hate God. I would imagine they do. It was 100% hatred. So it told me these things. It told me to no more. So I guess I thought it would. Stop praying, but I didn't. I'm not going to do that. And then it stood there looking straight at me with its black eyes and all its glory, I guess you might say. And then because it was right by my rosaries, you know, I put my rosary down on a glass table right next to my seat. It looked down on my rosaries. It looked back at me, and then it looked like it was started puffing up a little bit. And then it actually spit right on my rosaries. I saw saliva come right out of its mouth, right onto the table, right onto my rosaries. And then it looked back at me, and then it just slowly, like I say, like it owned the place, backed off, its horns backed out, everything backed out. The flame started to dissipate, the rippling in the air. It went away, and everything just went right back to normal. But I stood there for the longest time trying to remember everything that happened to me. I was looking at my rosaries because I saw it spit on my rosaries, and I thought it must be some, like, devil saliva on my rosaries, right? So I couldn't touch them for the longest time, and I just stood there thinking about it, trying to remember it. I couldn't speak about this for, like, months. So then what I did was, for me, I wanted to get it out of the house now because I knew, I was sure it was what happened. You know, it wasn't like maybe it's not, maybe it's this, maybe it's, you know, I was sure now, I was positive about everything. So the next morning at 6:30, I'm a Catholic, so I go to church, I receive a communion, I come back home, my wife has a holy water bowl. I took that, I went into every room because, if you read the Bible, and Jesus says you could raise the dead, cast out demons, you could do all these things that I could do even more. Now, if he said that, I kind of believe it. So I went to every room, and I said, Jesus is in me, and I'm telling you to get out of this house in the name of his, in Jesus' name. And I sprayed the holy water in every room, every closet, and I felt something leave. When I went in the attic, I went everywhere. And I went in one room that I was in, the last room, I felt something just go out, like just left, like the windows in the room kind of like shuffled a little bit, like moved a little bit, and I felt it was gone. And then I was sure that it was gone. And since that day, nothing has happened since that day. And then when my wife talks to me about it, when I finally was able to explain it to her, and she kept saying to me, we have to do something about this. I said, it's gone. I'm gone. I'm going to have to write it down, and you can read it, because I can't really, I don't know why. I just couldn't make myself tell this story. But I could write it, and I could draw it. So I drew what I saw, and I wrote what I saw. So I finally got everything out. And the book is 355 pages. So I finally got it all out where I was able to, now I could talk about it. So this is really the first time I'm able to, tell the actual story other than write
it. Does it leave you wondering, though, why, you're a God-fearing man. You've lived your life in a very clean way. You've done the right things. At least that's what you've conveyed to us today. Why?
Well, I'm like all the rest of us, don't believe me.
Oh, right. I understand that. But you've done more. You've worked in the favor of others by doing intercession and being a part of that. Why do you feel that you weren't protected more? Why wouldn't God have a shield around you like, no, this is one of my warriors. Get out of here.
I think it was for this reason, to be honest, for this book. I think it wasn't, I could see it wasn't allowed to go any further than its head and part of its neck. It wasn't allowed to touch me, you know what I mean? I mean, I've heard stories of devils harming people. I don't know if you have. Did you ever hear that? I mean, I've heard those stories. This wasn't like, I can see this wasn't allowed to do that. It was only allowed to go to a certain point. It told me what it wanted to tell me, and it showed me its hatred. And it showed me its hatred for my prayers, you know. So I didn't have I wasn't afraid when this whole thing. The one thing that was perplexing was that I wasn't frightened of it. And I think I wasn't frightened because I saw it couldn't go any further than it went. You know what I mean?
Maybe then that is the answer. Maybe the reason that it was allowed to get to you was a test of your faith. And the fact was, you came face to face with the devil. And you didn't flinch because of that strength and because of the honor that you have. I wonder if that's it. Like you said, believe in something. Believe in whatever religion you have in, as long as you have that conviction and you do good. That's an anchor point. That's something that's going to help you in the long run.
Absolutely. And I think that'll help you in the next life, too, because I believe, because in my religion, I believe when I die, Jesus and God's going to come for me, and not demons. You know what I mean? And I don't believe that they could even be around when they're around. So we have that gift of I'll tell you this right now. When my dad died, he was a good man. He raised us all. My religion is Catholic, so he raised us all. He went to church every Sunday. He received communion every Sunday. When he died. He was a young man. He had this blood disease, I said earlier. He was only like 62 when we went to the hospital. He died almost the same way my brother did, but they couldn't really bring him back. He kind of got back on his own at one point. He died, and he said to us, he turned to us, because we came back in to see him, and he said, the first time I died, I saw Jesus way out in the, it seemed like miles away, he said, but I think he's coming. And then, like not that long later, he turned to us and said, Jesus is here, and he just said goodbye, and he died. And that's the way I think we should die. You don't want demons there. You know what I mean? I mean, if you're not that close to heaven, you're going to be faced with these creatures who are going to try to seduce you in the other direction. If you don't have, this grace of having God, and having a relationship with Him, I think we all have to have that relationship with God. I think that's so important because it really, really, I'm not a skeptic, but I thought there was hell. I thought there was demons in hell. It wasn't positive, Just like you, now I'm positive. Now I'm absolutely positive that these creatures exist. There is a hell. I mean, the flames in there are blue, but I don't know. That's their empire. It really does exist. You just can't go there. I mean, you just can't. I mean, the problem with that is you go there. The other people who go to heaven, you could be their brother, and you're going to think, well, how could this person be happy in heaven while their brother is in hell? But it's almost like his choice. Like he You know what I mean? It's like, and God can give you the grace to not hypnotize you and forgetting your brother, but he can give you the grace to understand that that's where he wanted to be. That's where you're going to be. It's going to be fine. You're not going to worry about it. You can't do anything about it at that point. You can't pray for them because it's over. You can't, once you pass that chasm and you're seduced into hell, there's no way back. No way back.
John, it's a fascinating story. It's impactful. It's amazing that you came through with what you did. How has this touched your life and your family's life? When you told your wife and sons about this, did they roll their eyes? Did they think maybe it's time for the old man to get on some medication, or did they take the story seriously?
No. Well, they knew something was in this house. They felt the evil as I felt the evil. They knew it was here. You know, just as my son said, you know, he knew something was here. What is in this house? My wife knew something. She felt eerie, evil. It was in the house. She wanted me to bring priests in. She wanted to get like an exorcism done. They knew. We all knew something was here. You know what I mean? What it was going to do, how long it was going to stay, nobody knew. But we all knew something was in this house. So it wasn't like a surprise. And I wasn't really able to... I couldn't verbalize it. I could write it. As I said to you, I could write it down. So I said to my wife, you know, I'll tell you what happened. So I typed it all out, you know what I mean? And said, you're going to have to read it because I don't even know if I could really tell you this story about what I saw. Because, I mean, how many people, you know, see something like, or have an experience like this? Or I don't think that many. I don't think. I'm not sure. I mean, you probably know better than I am because you're kind of in that that industry where you talk to people
Sadly,
these experiences.
More than we should, right? A lot of people have weird experiences, yeah. and I hope that it's, and facing these kind of things. But maybe it's a wake-up call. Maybe that's their chance to realize there's, you know, something to do and a way to turn their lives around so that they can – make a better life for themselves.
Yeah, that's true. Like I say, my brother, who he's now a very religious person. I mean, after he had after-death experience he had with demons, he's a totally different person right now. I'm not a totally different person because I'm still going to pray and I'm still going to go to church. You know, I mean, I'm not going to really change my life. It seems to be okay. I got a family and I'm happy. I mean, I don't want for anything. I have a nice house. I got a beach house. I got my cars that I like. I mean, I don't, you know, need anything.
Right.
You know, I mean, my prayers never.
Is good. Right. You're already on the right path.
That's what I hope. And I mean, you know, we all need a correction here and there because we're human. I mean, just to say, nobody could say they're not a sinner. You'd be calling God a liar that way because we all are. You know, we're sinners. We're human. What are you going to do? You know?
Right. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story, John. Fascinating. And even though you face your darkness, it's an amazing moment that you're able to come through on the other side, realizing that the beliefs and the things that you've done in your life led you to feel strong against this instead of breaking to the fear. You didn't give in to what it was trying to do, to shake your faith or shake your belief system. It tried, but you won. So good job on that, John. That's amazing.
And then if anybody wants to read the book, it's at John-Eagan, EAGAN.com. They could look and they could see the actual drawing of the picture of the devil, and they can get the first chapter. They could read the first chapter if they'd like. And I hope so anyway.
And we've
and I
got
hope
the
does,
link up. Yep, we've got the link up on today's show, so you can find it right there and check in for the show. John, thank you so much, sir, and we wish you a very safe and happy future.
You too, Dave. Thank you. It was an honor to be here. I just love talking to your people.
Thank you. And remember, everybody, check me out tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And tomorrow on Coast to Coast AM, Slender Man is the talk of the day. Then Zach Bagans' Demon House tomorrow night and UFOs and alien encounters. That's what we've got on tap for you. Check it out at knsiradio.com. And you can stream the show live midnight till 4 a.m. We have open phone lines tonight as well. So once we've talked about Slender Man with Nick Redfern, we want to hear your calls on the best in overnight talk radio. That's Coast to Coast AM, but you've been listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
If Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino.
This is Julian Edelman from Dudes on Dudes with Gronk and Jules. Sunday mornings, I've got my game day ritual. Coffee, lucky socks, and now new morning Uncrustable sandwiches.
It's all about that 12-gram protein boost with the new Uncrustables Bright-Eyed Berry or Up and Apple flavors.
Bright-Eyed Berry's got a feisty receiver energy.
Up and Apple? Your classic do-it-all tight end.
Soft, pillowy, packed with protein, and easy enough for Gronk to grab from the freezer.
Whether you're on the couch, driving to the tailgate, or heading to the locker room, new morning Uncrustable sandwiches are the MVP of snacks.
Your new Sunday kickoff ritual starts here with new morning Uncrustable sandwiches packed with 12 grams of protein.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.